I remember when you decided to enter into this race in 2012. My first impression was, man, you already seem to have a good position already. Do you really want to go into this muck that is Congress? Did you ever have that feeling over the last 2 years that what did I get myself into? Or do you feel like, you were doing this for a reason?
Well, Jason, I will tell you, I probably don't have that feeling more than 3 or 4 times a day. But in a lot of ways, it was a lot more fun to be a general. But in seriousness, I think I felt like this was something that was important that needed to be done. It was a way to continue service. And we've seen so much discord in Congress and so much partisanship. And my entire adult career has been spent in trying to solve problems. And so when I ran 2 years ago, when I was asked to run, I thought, what a great opportunity to try to solve problems and continue to solve problems for our nation. And so that's the attitude I've taken to Washington. And of course we've seen a lot of they like to talk about gridlock, they like to talk about all of the problems. But we have had some successes, and I like to think that I've been part of the successes. I sit on the Armed Services Committee, I sit on the Agriculture Committee. We got an ag bill done for the first time since 2007, a 5-year agriculture bill. In fact, yesterday the Illinois Farm Bureau endorsed me for re-election because of my role in getting the Farm Bill passed and my role in representing agriculture interests from Illinois. And we've got a National Defense Authorization Act passed. So we get the WERDA bill, the Water Resources Development Act passed. So I like to think that I've been part of those successes, and I'd like to continue working to get problems solved rather than making problems.
It seems like, just from my observation, and I don't like to put people into boxes, but you probably fit the moderate Democrat description. I mean, you kind of part ways with your party on coal issues, I believe. There may be a couple of other things, but how do you kind of see yourself in Congress, and what do you think your role is, given that you're one out of 435, and a lot of people want to get stuff done there?
Well, I remember during the last election cycle, I was asked, am I a liberal or a conservative? And I said, well, I really don't like either one of those labels. I like to think of myself as a pragmatist. I like to think of myself as someone who works to get a job done. I try to evaluate every situation. I try to evaluate every vote on its merits. Anytime you're voting on a bill, there are going to be folks on both sides of the issue, and there are going to be folks who will present good arguments either way. And what you have to do is weigh those arguments. You have to weigh the benefits and the disadvantages of any legislation that you vote for. So that's what I try to do. I don't really keep track of those sort of things, but I know there are groups in Washington, D.C. that do, and I know I fall in the very moderate range of Democrats. I'm one of the folks who, as you indicate, I do vote. I don't hesitate to vote against the, if you will, against the party line when it's when I think it's necessary. And I try to vote for issues that, in the way that my constituents want to see me vote.
One of the things that I remember during the government shutdown is you voted against this provision about chaplains, and you said it was kind of like a gimmicky thing that the Republicans were putting forth. Was that kind of an example of how you took an issue and maybe took a broader view of it as opposed to just going with everybody else?
Well, absolutely. And that chaplain bill was misnamed. It should have been named the Let's Not Pay Our Chaplain Bill, because that legislation didn't pay the chaplains. And let me just give you a little brief background on it. In the United States, at bases here in the United States, there's a very real shortage of Catholic chaplains. Just as in the Catholic Church, there's a shortage of parish priests, and so they've had to close many parishes. So because the military can't recruit enough Catholic chaplains, we go out and contract with area priests to come on base and provide services. What the bill did was it said, well, even though the government is shut down, we'll let these priests come on base and do services. Now, we're not going to pay them. We're not going to pay their chaplain's assistants. We're not going to pay the phone bill. We're not going to pay their mileage to get to and from the base. But we'll let them come on base. Well, that was nonsense, you know. And I'll tell you that I have been portrayed in attack ads as being someone who's anti-chaplain. When I commanded the Illinois National Guard, I had 35 chaplains working for me. I had the only Jewish chaplain in the nation, in the National Guard, serving for me. And so every time we sent a unit overseas, that unit went out with its full complement of chaplains and chaplains' assistants. So I know how important chaplains are to the military. And this bill was just an absolute gimmick. And I refused to go along with that gimmick. I thought, it's time somebody stand up and tell the American people that this is nonsense, and I'm not going to participate in nonsense.
So if you are reelected, I mean, it takes time for a congressman to accumulate seniority. Obviously, Congressman Costello was very successful because he was there for a long time. What would you want to do over the next few years? Because it's always been said that your first reelection is always your hardest, and if you manage to win this, it's possible that you may not be targeted as you're being targeted now by the National Party. What would you want to do in Congress if you get to serve for a lengthy period of time?
Well, you know, I serve on what I think are two critical committees, not only for the region, but indeed for the entire nation and indeed the world. I sit on the Armed Services Committee, and of course with Scott Air Force Base here, that's a critical economic driver for the region. And we have to look at Scott not just as an economic driver for the region, but as part of our world security. Nothing moves in the world, anywhere in our military, that the fingerprints from Scott Air Force Base aren't on that movement somewhere. Secondly, I sit on the Agriculture Committee, and with the importance of agriculture to our district, to our region, to our nation, and indeed to the world, I think that's a very important committee to serve on. I intend to continue serving, if I'm reelected, I intend to continue serving those committees. Because of my military background, the fact that I'm the only retired two-star general in Congress, I have a great deal of credibility on that committee, and I provide input that someone who doesn't have my background wouldn't necessarily have. So I think it's an important, you know, Congress's role is that of oversight. It's hard to provide the oversight. I think I understand the military pretty well, and I think I can provide that oversight that's so necessary.
Just two or three questions about the campaign itself. I covered your first campaign. It was, as we were talking earlier, that it was two candidates who had no voting record, so it got very personal, it seems. This time, it's two candidates with a voting record. It seems like the focus is more on, like, what you've done in Congress, what Bost has done in Springfield, as opposed to personal attacks. Is that a fair assessment, or has it gotten kind of personal in recent days and weeks?
Oh, I think, Jason, that's a fair assessment. I think what's unfortunate is that national groups are coming in the attack ads, mischaracterizing my votes, and I think that is indeed unfortunate, but that's just part of the price you pay in this business. I think that, you know, I'm certainly running on issues, and I am running on my votes. I'm running on what I've done. You know, we were talking about the Armed Services Committee a few minutes ago, and one of the amendments that I sponsored and got through was a bill that we initially projected to save $44 million a year. It turns out it's going to save significantly more than that by eliminating a multiplicity of combat uniforms and getting back down to one, with a few exceptions. And as it turns out, you know, you think about $44 million a year in light of the defense budget, maybe that's not a lot of money. But, you know, over 10 years, that's almost $500 million. So there are other instances like that that I'm going to continue to work on. I worked on the Waters of the U.S. bill, which is one of the reasons the Farm Bureau, Illinois Farm Bureau, endorsed me yesterday. And so I intend to run on those issues and run on what I have accomplished and what I've gotten done for the district.
Why do you think this district is you know, competitive again. I mean, Jerry Costello always won it pretty handily. It's a Democratic-leaning district. You know, it hasn't seemed like you've done anything super, super scandalous or outrageous, but it seems like it's seen as a toss-up or a competitive race. Like, what's changed in this district to make it so that the DCCC and the NRCC have to get involved? And do you think that's going to be perennially the case every time you run for re-election?
Well, I think, first of all, district was redistricted after the 2010 census. So the last election that Congressman Costello ran in was 2010. 2012 was the very first election after that census. So this is not the same district that Congressman Costello ran in. There was population added to it because of the redistricting, so it's a different district. Also, you have the factor that this is a non-presidential year election, and so in non-presidential year elections, statistically, the president who is in the White House, his party always loses seats, over the years, and so that's a factor. And then another factor is that statistically, fewer Democrats vote in off-year elections than do in presidential year elections. So when you add all of those factors together, it makes it a much more competitive election.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out earlier, it's my first re-election.
Now, one thing I have to ask, I have to ask this because I know it's been part of the ads, the outburst that Boss did in Springfield. I mean, it's been part of the DCCC's ads. I don't know if it's been part of your ads, but why is that worth focusing on? I mean, some may see it as outrageous, but he may say, well, this shows I'm passionate about issues. Like, why has that become kind of centralized in this campaign?
Well, first of all, the DCCC ads, I have absolutely no control over, just as he has no control over the NRCC or other TAC ads against me. So let's get that out there right away. I think, you know, people are tired of the yelling and screaming and the arguing and government shutdowns. People don't want to see government shut down anymore. People want to see government get a job done. And it's awfully hard to reach across the aisle and talk to someone when they're screaming at you or flinging papers. That's not conducive to having an adult conversation. And I over the course of my career, have had to be in some difficult decision-making situations, and it always helps to have a cool head and act responsibly with the folks who are on the other side of an issue.